Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
A good Saturday to you. This is the weekend edition of the LA Report. I'm Julia Passian, and coming up in just a few minutes, you might not know this, but there is a large and growing population of wild donkeys in the state of California. Our Mariana Dale explains how the donkeys are being threatened by our climate emergency, like so many other things. Then we all know that riding a bike in LA is not for the faint of heart, and it's not really getting better despite ambitious safety plans. This week on How to LA, we take a look at our city's cycling infrastructure, and we'll find out what more needs to be done. Robert Luna has held his first news conference as sheriff-elect of L.A. County at Salazar Park in East L.A., just down the street from where he was born. KBCC's Emily Elena Dugdale was there.
Luna started off by sending prayers to the 25 sheriff's cadets injured in the car crash in Whittier this week. He then thanked the voters.
We received at least 61% of the vote to date.
And he listed his top priorities, which include, quote, eradicating deputy gangs.
I'm not going to hide from it. It's going to be dealt with.
After 4 years of outgoing Sheriff Alex Villanueva battling with watchdogs and the Board of Supervisors, Luna said he's focused on rebuilding trust within the community and within the department.
And the bottom line is that our service has to be effective, respectful, and constitutional.
Luna will be sworn into office on December 5th. Covering criminal justice, I'm Emily Elena Dugdale.
And Karen Bass also chose this week to make her first public appearance as mayor-elect of Los Angeles. She says that LA needs to do better by its residents.
So we cannot settle for people dying on our streets. We cannot settle for Angelenos feeling like they must look over their shoulder when they walk down the street. And we cannot accept that some of our neighborhoods in the city have been designated the most overcrowded neighborhoods in the nation.
Bass also pledged to declare a state of emergency on homelessness when she enters office December 12th. The incumbent LA Unified school board member in the East San Fernando Valley believes she's won a second term. Kelly Gonez has declared victory in the District 6 race. She leads her opponent, Marvin Rodriguez, with 51% of the vote. Rodriguez has not yet conceded. KBCC's Kyle Stokes has more.
Rodriguez's strong showing caught much of LAUSD by surprise. Gonez spent $161,000 on her general election campaign. Rodriguez, a Spanish teacher in the district, spent just $600 on some flyers, and he likely won support from some fellow teachers and also from parents upset with LAUSD's handling of the pandemic. But in her first term, Gonez worked hard to find a middle path between multiple rival factions in LAUSD politics. For her efforts, she won the endorsements of both LA's teachers union and two big donors who are often teachers union critics, Reed Hastings and Bill Bloomfield. That may have been enough for her to win re-election. Covering education, I'm Kyle Stokes.
California will spend $3.6 billion to get zero-emission vehicles and chargers for mostly low-income communities. In the state's largest such investment in clean transportation ever, it's part of a $10 billion package to speed up the transition and to fight climate change by lowering car emissions. One of the programs will provide cost-saving incentives for people to turn in an older car for a zero-emission one. Southern California needs more wildland firefighters and fast. In a new recruitment strategy, the Department of the Interior is holding a hiring event at Cal State Northridge this weekend. You can get hired right on the spot for a seasonal or full-time job fighting fires. They're hiring everything from entry-level jobs to helicopter search and rescue positions. Mike Thune is the Regional Fire Information Officer for the National Park Service.
We need firefighters, especially as we've looked at how the fire years have been the last few years. And as we look at even the weather currently, So we need to do things differently in order to be able to recruit that next generation of firefighters.
He says you can ask questions and figure out what positions are right for you, and you might leave with a new job. Doors open at Northridge's Student Union from 9 to 4 today and tomorrow. And there's a new program to help care for the paths around the LA River. The LA River Rangers program will hire 127 young people to provide upkeep services for 18 miles of the public spaces along the river. The program will be funded for 18 months, but will hopefully get developed into a permanent program. Workers can be part or full-time and can be up to 30 years old. For more information and the application, go to hirelayouth.com. Los Angeles is a divided house today. USC and UCLA football are playing their 90th crosstown rivalry game tonight in front of a completely sold-out Rose Bowl stadium. To tell us more about this historic game, we're joined by football color analyst at UCLA's radio station and former quarterback Matt Stevens. Matt, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's a great day. And the city is divided.
So, yeah, I want you to tell me about the history of that division. Of course, these campuses are 13 miles away from each other. So when did it become such an intense rivalry between the Trojans and the Bruins?
Well, I mean, it's always been an intense rivalry. You're either one or the other when you live in LA. And because of the proximity of the schools, you see the other team often, and you talk to them, jaw a little bit, and there's always been that rivalry, and you just want to, as a player, continue the rivalry and also get the win, because if you win, you have a year of bragging rights. If you lose, the other team is going to talk trash on you for the entire year until you win, so that makes it a big deal.
This is the 90th time that these teams have met to play each other. Are there any memorable moments from any past UCLA USC games that really stand out to you? Is like, wow, that was a crazy moment in this rivalry.
Well, you know, the biggest game I thought was actually when UCLA lost. It was between Tommy Maddox was the quarterback, and it was a 45-42 shootout at the Rose Bowl, and USC threw a touchdown pass at the very end. They won the game. That was really memorable. Also, Eric Affolter caught a controversial touchdown pass. I thought he was out of bounds. And if there was instant replay, he would have been out of bounds. But they didn't call it. And that was a touchdown for USC. And they won that game. So, I mean, there's a lot of moments. And unfortunately, sometimes as an ex-player, you only remember the ones where you lost or the team lost, because you're just, like I said, you feel so bad for the whole year.
Well, that brings me to the next question, because you've been a Bruin. What is it like to be on the other side as a player in a moment like this?
You definitely want to win this football game. It's one of the reasons that you go to either school is to play in this game. Coach Donahue, my former head coach, said it best. He would start the year every year and say, hey, look, we got non-conference, we have conference, and then we have the USC season. I don't care if you lose all the games, but just make sure you win that last season, referring to the USC game. I mean, it just means everything. I mean, you look back on your career and you not only talk about, all right, yeah, we went to some bowl games, but you always state your record against USC.
Help us understand the game tonight. Let's talk a little bit of shop. What are each of the team's rankings and what do you think we can expect at the game?
I think it's going to be a shootout. I mean, the teams, UCLA, they're ranked number 12, and USC's ranked, you know, 4 or 5. They're trying to get into the college football playoffs. That can't be the picture for UCLA because they had an upset last week against Arizona. It really doesn't matter, though. I think there's going to be a lot of fireworks, a lot of scoring. These are probably two of the best quarterbacks in the country, or if not the top five, in Dorian Thompson-Robinson and also Caleb Williams. Both of these guys can scramble around, buy time. They're very accurate. They can throw the ball downfield. UCLA will be a little bit different, that they're a running team. They have Zach Charbonnet, who's leading the country in all-purpose yards. He's just a terrific running back. UCLA has a good offensive line, whereas USC, they're going to throw the ball a lot. They have a bunch of great receivers on the outside. They do it through the air. UCLA does it on the ground. I think actually the first one to 50 is going to win this game.
And I want to get your thoughts also on the movement to the Big Ten. Does that affect the vibe at all, or as we track this rivalry?
I think the vibe is even stronger for the simple fact that the Regents has offered or is opposing or providing a little bit of opposition for UCLA to go. UCLA and USC need to go to the Big Ten to keep the rivalry alive. If UCLA can't go, I mean, you're not going to have the USC-UCLA game anymore. So I think it's important you keep the schools together and they go to the same conference.
That's UCLA Radio's football color analyst and former UCLA quarterback Matt Stevens. Kickoff for tonight's game at the Rose Bowl is at 5 p.m. Matt, thanks so much for being with us. This was fun.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. It's going to be a great game.
We'll be back after this short break.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
Welcome back to the LA Report. I'm Julia Paskin. The wild donkeys in California today descended from those brought to the state by Spanish colonists and later gold rush fortune seekers. Their population has ballooned, and the climate emergency is changing the landscape they rely on. Our own Mariana Dale reports.
Catanusco adopted her first burro in 2016.
I don't think any animal can hug you sweeter than a donkey. They put the weight of their head on your shoulder and basically fall asleep.
Usko and her husband, John Auburn, often hike in the mountains north of their ridge crest home and try to spot the wild donkeys. Lately, Auburn says they've noticed the consequences of California's ongoing drought.
We've been up in some areas where the springs are running dry and seeing carcasses of the horses and burros.
Further east near Needles, a rancher discovered 56 dead donkeys at the mouth of a dry spring in 2010. This summer, Bureau of Land Management's Carl Simon says staff noticed the water receding again.
We don't want them to die of thirst or do anything else or even suffer because of that reason.
In 1971, the federal government tasked the Bureau with protecting wild horses and donkeys on many public lands. California Wild Horse and Burro Program Manager Amy Dumas says the agency has to balance the animals' needs with those of livestock and native species.
If we don't manage the habitat for these animals, they literally can eat themselves out of house and home.
The Bureau comes up with what it believes is the right number of donkeys for each region. Right now, California has an estimated 3,400 burros on Bureau land, more than seven times what the agency considers sustainable. Dumas says there are several factors that make it hard to keep the population in check. For one, the donkeys thrive on desert plants.
Sometimes they will eat the spines off of Joshua trees, for example.
The burros have very few natural predators, and herds can double every 5 years. Some argue the donkeys can benefit other animals. Eric Lundgren has studied donkeys in the Arizona desert that dig down to water in dry stream beds.
It's a constant parade of wildlife going to drink from these wells.
Lundgren says when the wild donkeys experience thirst and hunger, though some will die, others can adapt. The animals' search for water could lead them into places where people already live. In the Inland Empire's Moreno Valley, residents like Rodney Amond regularly see burros munching on their lawns.
It's kind of like a buffet. When they come down in neighborhoods, it's like a buffet for them.
Across the country, the Bureau of Land Management rounded up more horses and burros in the last fiscal year than in any since 1985. Dumas says relocation, along with adoption, is the agency's main tool for reining in the burro population.
We're trying to do the best we can with limited resources, and we can't make everybody happy.
In Needles, where donkeys were running out of water this summer, Bureau staff managed to gather about a third of the herd and drive them to the agency's corrals in Ridgecrest. Here, there are hundreds of burros waiting for adoption. When I walk up to the fence, they inspect my microphone. The surrounding community seems to have embraced the animals. The nearby high school mascot is a burro. John Auburn and Karen Usko, the Ridgecrest hikers, started a nonprofit called the California Breakfast Burritos and train wild donkeys to be adopted out.
Actually, we take them anywhere we are invited to go. So we walk them in on the streets in Ridgecrest, and I think people are slowly getting used to seeing us doing it.
They acknowledge there's no easy fix for the wild donkeys overpopulation, but say that individuals can be part of the solution. I'm Mariana Dale.
Riding a bike isn't exactly the safest way to get around in Los Angeles, and it's now been 7 years since the city introduced two programs that were supposed to change that, Vision Zero and the Mobility Plan 2035. Since then, some new bike lanes have been installed, but the city's been dragging its feet on funding. At the current rate, the plan project wouldn't be completed for another 200 years. And meanwhile, traffic collision deaths are at nearly 60% higher than when they launched these programs. This week on How to LA, host Brian De Los Santos checks out some of the bike lanes in LA. We'll find out what's working and what more needs to be done.
No crosswalk here, so we're going to go to the main street.
I'm not loving this intersection.
Careful. What the fuck?
That was a red light and a half.
Someone just took a red light in the middle of nowhere. I saved Evan's life.
That was scary. From LES Studios, this is How to LA, where every day we're dropping some knowledge about this city. I'm Brian De Los Santos, and today we're talking about bike safety. I'm gonna be honest real quick. I'm no cyclist, but tens of thousands of Angelenos use a bike to commute every single day. And as you can probably guess, it's pretty dangerous out there. The city has launched campaigns like Vision Zero and the Mobility Plan 2035 to try and make streets safer for folks to walk and ride. But bicycle fatalities are on the rise in LA. 2021 was the deadliest year this century for traffic collisions in the city. 294 deaths, and half of the people that were killed weren't even in a car. Many of them were pedestrians. 17 were on a bicycle. So today, I'm checking out some of the things city officials have done to make LA streets safer, and testing out some of the new bike lanes with How to LA producer Evan Jacoby. We're talking to some experts about what it takes to get them installed, and what more needs to be done. We are in Culver City, and we're about to ride some of the Metro's rideshare bikes. I got my bike. Which way do we go? We headed towards a 2 mile stretch of West Adams Boulevard between Fairfax and Crenshaw. Well, here goes my cardio for today.
Road deaths are not inevitable, they are preventable. Cities and government should do everything they can with policy, with engineering, with education and enforcement to really reduce and ultimately eliminate traffic deaths.
That's Ryan Fonseca.
And I report on transportation and mobility.
Ryan's been following all the traffic safety measures that have been put in place over the last few years. Can you give us like a moment in time where we're at with these like zero traffic fatalities right now?
Over 100 more people were killed this past year than when Vision Zero started. So that kind of gives you a sense of really the city's inability to reduce deaths, which is the goal of that program. I think one of the biggest things that I hear from advocates, from even some city leaders, is just that the city hasn't actually invested in the program. LADOT has been asking for kind of increased budget for a while now to address these safety issues. They often don't get the money that they ask for.
Critics say LA hasn't spent nearly enough money on the problem. For example, New York City has spent more than $1 billion on its Vision Zero program, and it appears to be actually working. Here in LA, we've only spent a few hundred million, and the difference is clear. What about the mobility plan?
Yeah, so that plan was actually adopted the same year that the city adopted Vision Zero back in 2015. It's called Mobility Plan 2035, and it sort of has some similar goals. There's a little connective tissue there. It basically envisions a city with a more connected bike network, more pedestrian enhancements and pedestrian plazas, potentially bus-only lanes, and just kind of a more friendly, more walkable, safer city. Trying to incentivize people to drive less and choose to walk or choose to bike somewhere. Unfortunately, though, what we saw was we're nearly 10 years into this plan. And according to some data, some advocates sent me that they pulled from the city's archives, roughly 3% of the plan has been completed so far. It's going to take another 200 years for them to finish this plan at that rate.
Even though the changes have been slow, there is stuff happening. New bike lanes in West Adams, Culver City, and along San Vicente in Wilshire. And this summer, they broke ground on a new bike path through South LA. So we want to check out what some of these changes actually look like on the ground. And y'all should see me. I look like such a dork. I've got Evan's microphone, like the big fluffy kind, taped upright inside his backpack, which I'm wearing like kangaroo style across my chest.
We're about to hit Washington and National, where there is a dedicated bike lane, and it has like cones where it is sectioned off just for the bike users. We have a sign that says, "How do you feel about bike lanes?" Oh, someone said we hate them. Why?
Why do you hate them?
Someone said we hate them. Interesting. From a car, though. From a car.
We're riding through this kind of dangerous corridor. Or at least it used to be. LA's Department of Transportation says this strip has seen way more deadly collisions than nearby areas. Last year, the DOT took away two car lanes and turned them into bike lanes. They added more crosswalks with those blinky lights on the ground, too.
We're back on the bike lane on Adams. Cars aren't super close to you, but you feel the swoosh. I mean, I love this. I love being able to enjoy my streets like this. I just, when we were like squeezed in next to like a pedestrian or a car, I tense up. But I would do this more often. Hell yeah. It beats getting stuck in traffic sitting in the car.
Well, besides actual cars going into the bike lane, I've seen that for sure, and it's wild, bro. My name is Andres Fuentes, and I live around Berry Avenue. It's still good, though. At least everybody can have a way of driving and, like, riding safely, at least.
How about we take a quick 5-second drink of water somewhere?
Aquí estamos, les ofrecemos este pastelitos de carne con papitas.
This is Blanca Morales. She was selling yuca fries and Salvadorian pastelitos de carne on the corner of Ridgely and Adams.
También panes con pollo y carne asada.
So yum.
Se le pongo más curtido ahí.
Anyway, I asked her about the changes she's noticed after they painted the bike lanes, just a few feet away from her booth.
Estoy curioso de si has visto accidentes o has visto a gente en la bici como que se caiga o no sé qué.
She told me that the drivers she sees aren't careful with the bike lanes.
Sí, pues hay muchos accidentes a veces y pues no respetan las líneas. A veces hasta me han insultado, voy cruzando la calle y pues no respetan ni las luces y es un poco difícil así.
It's happened to me as a pedestrian, she says. She's gotten yelled at just because she's crossing the street.
We are pulling up to a climbing gym. We think that we might be able to talk to some cyclists there.
My name is Takeshi Tawarada. I live in Jefferson Park, right next to West Adams.
We caught up with Takeshi at the climbing gym parking lot.
I saw you driving in with your bike. How long have you been commuting to your gym this way?
The past 6 months, ever since the new bike path came in.
Are there dedicated bike lanes on your commute here, or is it always like dodging cars for you?
It used to be dodging cars, but on West Adams Boulevard, I think they just put in a new bike lane last year. So I was super pumped about it because for me personally, it takes me straight from point A to point B on a really safe bike path.
A lot of people love these new bike lanes, but we know that it's not a perfect solution. You heard that person shouting earlier that they hated them, right? Angelinos, myself included, like to get where they're going fast. And let's be real, anything that slows down traffic is kind of annoying for folks, even if it might save a life. Adding bike lanes to communities has even caused some people to try and recall their council members. That actually happened to Mike Bonin a few years ago, and after the complaints, some of those new bike lanes disappeared. It's been a little over a year since those bike lanes were painted in West Adams. So I'm a little curious, is there any real evidence they're working?
This is just the top of the iceberg of what's happening in the community, but also individuals that are stepping forward to be a part of the solution.
That's Yolanda Davis Overstreet.
And I am a mobility justice strategist, and I played an instrumental role in the reconfiguration of the Adams Boulevard Safety Project.
Yolanda is the person responsible for getting these bike lanes installed in the first place.
We're putting our lives on the line when we pull our bikes out of our homes or our garage to simply do what LA is trying to tell us to do. Let's get on bikes. Let's use public transit. Well, how can we do that if it's not safe?
I just want to take a second to specify something kind of important. We're not just talking about the sporty spices out there wearing spandex and training for the Tour de France. We're talking about everyday Angelenos who rely on bikes to get around the city.
These bike lanes are not gentrification. These bike lanes exist, number one, to save lives, Black and brown lives in particular, because in most cases we live in disenfranchised communities. And therefore we have crumbling sidewalks, streets that have not been repaved, nor do we have many crosswalks or traffic lights. Adams Boulevard was on the list for years as a high injury network. I welcome bike lanes because I had to, from a child, put my bike on the back of my car and take it to where a bike lane exists in order to ride my bike or to go to the marina, you know, or the beach path or something like that to feel safe. This biking thing, it's here and it's us. And let's embrace it. And maybe you can go out and get you a bike and, you know, get out here and ride with us.
Vision Zero's goal is to eliminate traffic deaths in the city by 2025. The target for the mobility plan is a little bit more conservative, at 2035. But either way, we've got a lot to figure out. LA's got new management coming in after this election. They'll have to tackle this issue in some way or another.
I'm not loving this intersection.
Careful.
While we wait and see how they're going to handle it, maybe we should all try to slow down a bit. Don't go running those red lights like that guy did. And get off the phone! Let's avoid hurting someone, yeah?
I'm pulling back where we started our journey. Excited to get off this bike. Let's put her back in. Oh. Is that it? Do we push a button?
Alrighty, y'all. Evan and I are kind of tired from all that biking and near-death experiences. So we're going to go chill.
Hey, thanks for listening to the weekend edition of the LA Report. We'll be back tomorrow with more of what's happening around LA. Until then, enjoy your weekend. Try to take it easy. I'm Julia Paskin.
This program is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.